Electric bicycles are my jam. I'm turning into a nut for a good e-bike. It's easy to get around, we save gas not driving our car for short trips to the store, and I'm getting a little extra exercise. The folks at Velotrick are sponsoring a series of videos on my channel to show off some affordable e-bikes and help people get up to speed. It's easier than you think, and prices have never been more competitive. You can catch those videos on my YouTube channel, but if you're interested in shopping an e-bike, head over to velotrick.bike/somegadgetguy and look at their road bikes and fat tires. Again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. If any of those bikes look good to you, you can save an additional $60 off an already low price by using the coupon code SOMEGADGET60, SOMEGADGET60 at checkout. Once again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy and coupon code SOMEGADGET60. And I thank Velotrick for being a sponsor on this show. This means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast. Absolutely one of the worst names in podcasting history. But the QA is the important part, because obviously that stands for question and answers. We like to make this an interactive conversation. We like to kind of chat out our feels. That's why I like to hold my show on a Monday, so that we can kind of get a feel for all of the tech news that's come over the past week. Maybe news broke over the weekend. We have a chance to really kind of keep up with it, not just read headlines and get outraged, but see where these stories evolve. We're already seeing an incredible group in the chat this morning. Excuse me. You're going to be hearing a lot of that. I'm going to try and do this. So, especially for replay crew people, if the audio is suddenly cutting out, it's probably because I'm coughing or something like that. But we've got Dave Burns, Mountain Dew Lou, Scoop. We've got 2Turbo, Barry Johnson, Vazikos, Aditya Anil, Kappa Cash, Simon Says Hypno, Blue Man Rule, David Lockwood, J-Man150, Tobias Headland. Who else am I missing? And Dave Burns just popping back in to say happy Monday, nerds. So, there's a tradition on this podcast where the last Monday of every month we do a pajama podcast. And I've actually gotten some criticisms from folks who say things like, "Hey Juan, when we catch the live stream, your pajamas don't seem to be any different than your normal collection of ratty hoodies and worn-out novelty t-shirts. So just special, because this is a special pajama podcast, I dressed it up a little bit with my grown-up, button-up pajamas and a little knit cap here just to be a bit comfier, because we didn't really have a pajama podcast in February. With MWC and a ton of smartphone and accessory announcements. Like, we were under embargo for a bunch of stuff over all of February. Excuse me. I couldn't do a pajama podcast in February. It was just too much news. And I was very surprised at the amount of really cool stuff, the really exciting stuff that we got. Because we had so many phone announcements for 2024 that happened months earlier in 2023. And getting to MWC, I was really concerned. Like, what are we going to see that's going to be that exciting? And a lot of these companies really brought some fun stuff, especially to the international market, where now we're sort of staging Chinese release for smartphones earlier, and then the international market gets their hands on stuff. But I think these companies have all done a really good job of kind of piecemealing out some things so that there's still stuff for us to get excited about when we get to MWC. So, to give myself a break, and you can hear in my voice and the fact that I've already been, like, muting my microphone and clearing my voice, I am beat. I am whooped up pretty bad. So this is going to be a really casual rambling show. I don't have my normal, you know, news block and gadget block and, like, trying to structure I really feel like we can go wherever this chat takes us. Like, Al already called it. Al Sabakli, some sick gadget guy, question mark? And I kind of feel... I kind of feel like a part of the Dave LMAO structure for your podcast. Yeah, I'm real bad at keeping the podcast organized. But there is, like... you can go to the podcast posts on somegadgetguy.com and see that I do organize things like links that we talk about and stuff. I have zero. There is news blowing up all around us. Apple facing a record-breaking fine from the EU and Google laying off YouTube Music, contractor developers, and like there's stuff that I could sink my teeth into. I have a web browser up with nothing in it. So we're really going to go wherever the chat takes us. Oh, Dave, that's dirty. And Al Sabakli is like, yeah, EU, baby. So that's actually part of, in the title, it's part of where this whole last week completely got out of control. I'm working on a couple of sponsored videos. These things are taking forever. I have a laptop that I would love to tell you more about. I've got some other products and accessories that I would love to tell you about. And, you know, embargoes have been pushed back, and the process of getting approvals on the videos just takes forever. And let me tell you, if you're trying to kind of keep a YouTube channel afloat and you don't have, like, a staff to help you manage all of this stuff, it severely cuts into your time to be able to do things like use the gadgets and review them and talk about them when you're trying to make these other kinds of sponsored conversations. And then you also know the second I say sponsored in a video, YouTube's going to bury it anyway. So, it's pretty tough. So this whole last week, I'm trying to just kind of tread water. We got an early video out because the folks at Vivo, and we can talk about that too. I have no idea what I did with my Vivo. My Vivo is gone. Well, that's no good. I had the Vivo V30 Pro on my desk because I wanted to at least be able to hold it up today. And it's this really cute little fashion phone with an incredible little selfie camera thing on it with a fill light. Oh, it is. It's back here. Okay. At least it was on. at least it was back in the bookshelf. And we can talk about this too if you guys want. But I got that video out. The embargo lifted before our show on Monday. And then I didn't really get anything else out last week because any downtime I had where I could get upright and I wasn't completely, you know, out of my gourd, I was working on these sponsored videos. Tuesday of last week, I started getting this little in my jaw. This little like tension. This like little knot. And it's a couple weeks ago, something similar had happened. It felt like I had just chewed way too much gum, but only on the left side of my face. And it was stiff for like a whole day, and I kind of worked it out. And then a day later, it sort of just like eased up. But there were these moments where I would get this kind of like hot spit flavor in my mouth. It was pretty gross. Well, Tuesday, I start getting that little like, I kind of tension again. So it's not something I can't work through. I can kind of talk around it, but you know, hey, Tuesday, I'm just going to take it easy. Maybe I'm just working this all too much and I just need to get a little rest. So I didn't do any shooting. I just wrote. I just got some writing done, got a little editing done, replied to a bunch of emails. Tuesday was kind of an off day. Wednesday, the left side of my face starts swelling up like crazy. And it's asymmetrical. It's only the left side of my face. That little tension spot is starting to grow. Like it looks like I've got the mumps. The left side of my face is just completely distorted. And you're like, well, it really hurts to move my jaw, and I certainly can't put myself on camera looking like half Juan, half chipmunk. So I go to an urgent care. And they're kind of poking and prodding. And, you know, like the doctor kind of walks in. You know, like that really reassuring feeling you get when a doctor's like, hey, you know, we're just going to kind of check things out. What's going on? And then they really look at you and they're like, oh, Do you know, like, that feeling when a doctor goes, huh, like, that doesn't reassure me. That makes me feel very vulnerable right now. I'm a little scared that a doctor has gone, huh. So they're kind of poking and prodding around, and in squeezing, again, I get that, like, just like this little taste of a hot spit in my mouth, and it is so gross. The human body is revolting. I don't know how we live in these flesh machine things. They're just constantly breaking down on us, and they're super gross. But it turns out, due to a combination of stress, not getting enough sleep, not staying properly hydrated. So, you know, a J-Man 150, when you're giving me those things like to stay hydrated, I really should be listening to you more. Stress, lack of sleep, and not staying properly hydrated. I had an impacted salivary gland. So just the little gland, and you can kind of feel like the little hole in your cheek that helps you salivate, was blocked. Like these, it had gotten infected. It had gotten blocked, and then that blockage created an infection. And now my body was producing all of this saliva, and it couldn't go anywhere. So it was just filling up fluid in the side of my face. And it's so gross. So the doctor is like, okay, well, one, we got to clear up this infection. They put me on I was on an anti-inflammatory just to kind of reduce it, but they gave me a Z-Pak just to kind of help clear up the infection. And I hate taking antibiotics because, like, they wreck my stomach. But 5-day course, not that serious. And then he was like, okay, so one of the other things, you know, warm compress, we just got to try and loosen this up. There are these like little hard crystals that form because of your spit, and it's super gross, but that's what's blocking all of this up. So plenty of fluids, warm compress, warm fluids. You don't want scalding hot fluids, but just warm. Anything you can do to kind of break it up. And then also, do you like sour candies? And I was like, I do. I've been known to enjoy some Sour Patch Kids, and I actually, as a kid, I loved Warheads and stuff like that. And he was like, great. So a punch of citric acid on top of some warm tea should help loosen all this stuff up. So it's the first time in my life where a part of my prescription was like sour candies. So I immediately go to fill my prescription, and I also pick up some lemon candies. And it did. It did the trick. It took 2 days for, like, everything to kind of drain, for everything to kind of calm down, and for my face to get back to normal. But now we're talking, it's Friday, and I am wiped out. It took so much energy out of me to get all that set up. So nothing got shot for the YouTube channel, and I even tried, like, doing some writing, and I was like, well, maybe I could turn this into a written piece, but really I want this to be a video. And then there was a post I wanted to put up on the Patreon that also got delayed too. So if you were wondering why Juan was a little quieter, or just kind of hanging out on social media a bit more than usual, that was it. That was it. I had a tiny little gland in my mouth that caused my face to almost explode, and it's just really gross. The human body is really gross. So we need to take a quick pause here. T-Bubs 45 subscribed with Prime. They've been subscribed for 4 months now. And this fanfare of glory, courtesy of one Mr. Barry Johnson, who hooked me up with the Stream Deck, is for you. I hope that actually played through. All right, good. So Gormlord, thankfully, no. I was worried it was any number of things. Like, I'm on a bunch of, because of my psoriasis, I'm on medications that kind of reduce my immune system response and stuff like that. And I'm regularly getting blood work done for things like, do you have, they're constantly checking me for, like, cancer. So that's already scary. If, like, a lymph node is swelling up on my body, I'm freaking out about that. Like TB and tests like that. So I'm constantly getting blood work for that. So thankfully it wasn't tetanus. Because I don't know that my body can fight stuff like that very well on its own right now. Simon says, hypno, that sounds awful. It was pretty bad. It was really gross. Blue Man Rule. I didn't know that this was a thing that could just kind of happen like this. Blue Man Rule, I've had the same issue. Mine was a result of a bad root canal that was infected and transferred to my sinuses. Took a year to get it out, but injections of antibiotics fixed it. And I had an emergency root canal, I want to say about 10 years ago. And it was the same thing. Like, oh, there's like this little tinge, like this little like kind of metallic like nerve in my jaw. And then by that evening, I was doubled up in pain on the couch, like emergency dialing my dentist, just like, what the heck is going on? It was brutal. I take any kind of face infection probably over serious now because of that. So that happened. I'm sitting on the couch and I'm doubled over, and they remote fill a prescription for an antibiotic and also for a painkiller. And in the news that week was the news of a man who had passed away from a tooth infection because he could only afford one of the two prescriptions, and he opted for the painkiller instead of the antibiotic, and the infection spread. And so now it's like, I can't mess around. If I have an ear infection, I'm going to like the most expensive specialist that I can find in UCLA's network, and that will at least partially be covered by our insurance. Like, I'm not messing around with any of this anymore. But it's definitely kind of owing to the current climate of how we all get work done, of how we take care of ourselves. I'm not doing a very good job of taking care of myself right now. I'm trying to tackle, you know, projects that pay versus projects that are the more passion projects versus, you know, sort of the side gigs that I still run for media and voiceover and for production work. And stuff is starting to impact. Like, I've been borrowing time from sleep and eating and exercising, and I got to stop doing that. So unfortunately, that kind of means like the thing that will probably get impacted the most is the free YouTube stuff, where I want to focus more on getting things out for the Patreon and then also making sure I'm keeping all the side gigs happy too. So it's pretty gross. It's pretty gross. Yeah, DTNL, I just thought it was clever. It's forcing the glands to salivate, forcing the blockage to clear. That doctor is smart. And again, it was like, I haven't had, you know, these kinds of sour candy. This podcast not sponsored by lemon-flavored candy company, so I'm trying not to do that and, like, hold it up and, like, this was medicinal. Actually, that's kind of funny. This isn't lemon heads for enjoyment. This was medicinal. But also, he was saying, like, it is going to kind of create more fluid and stuff moving around in your mouth. And with me drinking a ton more water over those several days, I'm sure it helped too. But it was just like, yeah, the citric acid might help break up some of that blockage too. And it was like, wow, I had forgotten how much I loved like this little punch of super, super sour before it gets sweet. And it was funny because I had like two of these big bags. So I would, if you've ever had one of these, it starts really sour and then it gets kind of sweet. So as soon as it started calming down and it was getting sweet, I would spit it out and then get a fresh one just for the extra burst of the really, really sour stuff. It's so, God, it's so funny. Yeah, Kapakash, a doctor prescribing sour candy, best medication ever. And Simon, thanks for that. I'm glad I'm feeling better too. It was a ridiculous couple of days. Absolutely ridiculous couple of days. Dave Burns, Tim Apple tried to silence you. Turns out, if you don't use iPhones, Apple can beam blockages into your salivary glands to stop you from commenting on Apple's shenanigans. Ugh, so bad. Oh, Scoop. Oh, that's terrible. I had one under my tongue. It sucked. You know, and again, you describing that, I'm so grateful it was, like, up on the side of my face. Because, like, it didn't impact, like, being able to talk. It hurt to move my jaw, but I could still, like, talk. If the swelling had been, like, lower or in one of, like, the bottom or, like, kind of down more where, like, tonsil stones might be, I can't even imagine how painful that must be. Oh, Aditya, no joke, man. Afford. This is a human life we were talking about. We really goofed up with our healthcare systems. And Dave Burns right after, healthcare radicalized me too, lol. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Well, I'm going to take a drink of coffee here. Yeah, Dave, that's exactly, that guy would probably be with us if he could have gotten both medications. I remember showing that to my wife, and my wife is the worrywart in the household. I'm the, I don't know, let's keep an eye on it. If it gets worse, then we'll take you to the doctor. But after that, and this is like years before Lex was born, after I read that story and realized, like, holy cow, that could have been me. If I had just opted for the painkiller, you know, maybe I'll start the antibiotic tomorrow, and then the infection had spread. I definitely could have seen a Juan who would have made that decision to space things out or wait a little longer. Let's see if it calms down before I talk to my doctor. I mean, I've had other weird, painful things before. Like, I've always been that kind of guy. And ever since then, like, anything that is changing on my face, I now immediately freak out. And it's like Danger Will Robinson flailing robot arms, and like I'm calling every specialist I can get my hands on. I recently, a couple years back, I lost my aunt. And she was a brilliant school teacher, but she was constantly working for school districts in Orange County, in the more red areas of Southern California, and constantly working on contracts where she wasn't a unionized teacher and she wasn't getting the same benefits. And the only reason she had health care at all was because of the Affordable Care Act. But she started getting this kind of like numbness on one side of her face, and then her face just kind of fell asymmetrically. Like, she couldn't control her eyelid, or her mouth wasn't working the way it was supposed to. And even with all of her family members saying, like, you got to go check this out, she didn't understand how the ACA worked. And so she waited. And it turns out she had a very serious medical condition, and she ultimately passed away from that. And those kinds of things have, like, scared me so bad. Like, little cuts, little scrapes, and maybe I'm overreacting, or I'm trying to clean things out, or I'm using, you know, harsher antibiotics than I probably should be. But this has hit close to home too many times for me to just play it off. And I'm very grateful that I'm lucky enough to be able to afford a slightly more aggressive medical response. And then I think there are a lot of people in the wealthiest, most prosperous country on the planet who have to make that choice every day. My face has gone numb on half of the side of my face. Maybe I'll check it out tomorrow. And that's not okay. And that it's difficult to see those types of individual situations play out time and time and time again and not get a little worked up that we're not really looking out for each other as well as we could be. Yeah, Al, you know what, man? I'm trying to take this a lot more seriously. Al says, I'm a contractor, and no matter the amount of projects I have to tackle at one time, I never skip my workout or a healthy lunch or at least 6 to 7 hours of sleep. So one of the things that Marie and I have talked about is our bedtime routine is not super healthy either. That came out really funny that I'm about to talk about me and my wife's bedtime routine on a podcast. I'm sure she's probably totally cool with me sharing personal information about stuff. And also the phrasing sounds a lot more suspect, than I probably meant it to. But you know, I'll blame it on like yesterday was my last day of the antibiotics round. So I'm still upset stomach and kind of foggy. what I mean is we finally get Lex to bed, and her bedtime isn't late, but this is a little girl that fights sleep. She is primed for FOMO. She does not want to miss anything. She has tons and tons of questions. As her body is relaxing, her mind is spinning. She's a lot like her dad. So once we get her to sleep, that's when Marie and I feel like, hey, we can put on a TV show we want to watch. It's a little bit more adult-themed, like action or gore or even just like harsh language. And then we end up watching an episode or three. Not, let's put on an episode and then go to bed. It's like, hey, we're lazy on the couch, probably almost falling asleep on the couch. And then it takes so much more effort to get up and go to bed that we don't end up going to bed until like midnight. And then we got to wake up early to start everything all over again. So, especially with me not feeling well and being kind of sick, the last couple nights we've started changing that up too. The time we get to spend together, unfortunately, will have to be reduced so that we can get to bed at a reasonable time, get a reasonable amount of sleep, and then hopefully we'll feel better in the morning. Marie's saying it's already working for her. Like, the last couple days, she's felt better just because she's gotten, like, an extra hour or two of rest in bed, and then, you know, the rest of the day seems to be working a bit better. So, yeah. Blue Man Rule. Yeah, Lemonheads are old school candy. I have not had Boston baked beans in so long. I genuinely cannot remember what they taste like. The last time I had Boston baked beans, my dad was stationed in Boston, which means that would have been fourth grade for me. Holy cow. You just literally writing Boston baked beans just like sent me on like a memory quest of when my dad was stationed in Massachusetts. Man. Okay, yeah, that just kind of broke my brain a little bit. Sorry, Blue Man Rule. I'm gonna have to dig some up just because I can't remember. I just can't remember what those taste like. Oh, Dave Burns. The market will solve this issue, I'm sure. Now, excuse me while I help some insurance executives to a real nice time. Yeah, I kind of feel like a lot of the news and stuff too. I don't want to speak on political issues and how leftistly radicalized I've become, but just in general, there's a tone floating around, especially in like tech circles, where in years past it's been very, you know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. I am my own person and I don't need to collective bargain because I am an exceptional individual who always gets what I put myself out there to get. But yeah, it seems like there's been a lot more chatter lately in the sort of libertarian-leaning sectors of technology to start looking at the outcomes around things like collective bargaining and unionizing. So I'm hoping that some of those trends are turning. I feel like we have a long ways to go, but we can make some of these corporate business practices at least a little less fashionable. Because again, we keep talking about the economy in a certain kind of particular tone. When massive corporations are doing really well, we're all happy. But increasingly, the disparity between massive corporation stock price goes up because they laid off a bunch of people is starting to affect the tone of the conversation for the actual employees and the workers and the developers and the contractors and everybody else. Like, again, the ire that's been kind of posted around this YouTube Music situation. And I am not well read up on it enough to figure out what is kind of really happening and what the sentiment should be. But it's another example of Google doing something at a time period, the timing on it is just terrible optics. So however people are interpreting that, even if it was totally above board and the employees are freaking out, we've had so many instances of big technology companies kind of doing some shady stuff. This is another one that's just a terrible look for Google at exactly the wrong time. And I feel like that's kind of the beginning. That's how we start building the momentum on saying, no, our relationships between customers and manufacturers and then those manufacturers and then their employees, it needs a market correction. I don't know what that looks like. I actually don't have a good solution on how individual corporations should be doing business on either side of their consumer electronics interactions. But I think we all agree that something needs to change, that something needs to be sort of shook up. DT Anil. Juan, wrong show. Yeah, that's my OnlyFans show, apparently, not my public YouTube broadcast. Getting down here. JMan150, the 14 Ultra and the Vivo V300 Pro. I wish I had a 14 Ultra. I'm still reaching out to Xiaomi PR I'm kind of curious to see. They might be shaking up some of their PR relationships, but I have the 14. And this is a video that I put out on the Patreon early access, and it should be going live tomorrow or Wednesday. But even just seeing what Xiaomi has done with the regular 14, the camera technology that Xiaomi is investing in is surprisingly aggressive. And they did a massive partnership with Sony to get new 1-inch camera sensors out on their phones. And now they're doing a partnership with OmniVision that is blowing my mind right now. So I'm hoping I can kind of continue that conversation with the 14 Ultra. If they don't send a 14 Ultra, unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to take a pass on reviewing the 14 Ultra this year. The money I would spend on acquiring a 14 Ultra cannot be easily replaced. So if I buy a 14 Ultra here in the United States, there's kind of nowhere I can sell it. Like, that's why I still have my 12S Ultra and my 13 Ultra. I'm using them as production B-roll cameras, but also I can't really get rid of them. I can give them away, but that doesn't help replenish. Like, if I buy a Motorola, it devalues crazy fast, but I can still get a couple $100 for it. If I decide to flip a OnePlus, I can get a couple $100 for it. Spending $1,400 on a Xiaomi, sure, I could probably sell it off on Swappa for a couple $100, but then that puts me significantly more in the red to talk about other gadgets and products. And the money that I'm trying to save against buying every phone that comes out this year is I really want to spend more time with laptops as we get to the summer. So if I can pick up a Snapdragon powered X Elite, and I'm assuming that laptop is going to be over $1,000, well, I have to make the choice between buying the Xiaomi 14 Ultra or buying one of these laptops to really talk about something that I think is even more exciting. It's newer. It's going to have a much bigger impact on our tech purchasing decisions moving forward. Aditya Anil, like, I'm trying to change it up. I don't know how successful I've been, but saying my sleep schedule has become non-existent. I got to take care of me. 11 o'clock, I got to get to bed. So it's the thing. Like, we can also just kind of look out for each other, you know, like, hey, you know, doing well, you getting some sleep? Like, there used to be all of these like conversational relationship things, like, hey, you're working hard, or hey, you're slacking off. Like, I don't know. I actually haven't worked in an office for so long. I don't know how people talk to each other anymore. I think they just say something ridiculous and then end it with lol, because they're saying LOL, and that's hilarious. Sorry. Simon says, Hypno, Cucker Tarlson didn't highlight Russian medical care? It's radical. He was so impressed with their shopping carts. I just, who could imagine technology like putting a coin into a shopping cart to keep you from stealing the shopping cart? You know, it's amazing. Blue Man Rule, that crunchy sweet red shell with the peanut in the middle, Boston baked beans. And I mean, it's like a candied nut. I'm trying to recall what they taste like. It's driving me crazy. I'm going to have to go and I'm probably going to have to order some. I cannot remember the last time I saw them on a store shelf to purchase. So I'll see what I can do. Maybe for another future pajama podcast, it's just the crunching sounds of me eating on a microphone, because that won't drive anyone crazy. Chewing sounds amplified with incredible recording technology. So I would like to switch gears. Let me get this one comment and then we're going to switch gears. So Gabaletta says, I would go with the laptop. As exciting as the 14 Ultra is, these new Qualcomm powered Windows on ARM PCs, man, that's a mouthful, is more interesting to test out. And I agree. I think this is the turning point in testing the future viability of sort of the Microsoft side of the computer landscape. At present, there are incredible Windows machines that you can buy. Hold on one second.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Incredible Windows machines that you can buy. I don't feel like any current decently powered Windows machine really succeeds at being a good portable computer. Right now, I kind of feel like most of these are better portable desktops. You take it out of your home, throw it in a backpack, you go somewhere, you set it up, and you plug it in so that you can really use all of the compute power from an Intel AMD chipset or AMD or NVIDIA graphics. If you unplug that machine and it's running on battery power, you often won't get the full compute power of the CPU and GPU, and your battery life is radically short. Obviously, that can change up if you've got lower power internals, like you got a student-grade machine or something kind of Chromebook-y. But if you're going to do that, I've held up things like Windows on ARM tablet hybrids, like the Surface Pro 9 SQ3 and the Robo Ancala. Those are lower performance, like they're roughly as powerful as like an 11th gen Core i3, maybe a 10th gen Core i3. That's a respectable amount of compute power, right? That's plenty to get someone through their day, a student to take notes, work on documents, spreadsheets. I can get photo editing done. I mean, it's a little slow to kick and launch a program, but they're wonderfully capable little machines. But those are some of the only Windows devices that I feel really succeed at being the computer they're supposed to be when you're out on the go and you're away from a charger. Balancing higher performance internals, we're constantly fighting this barrier. An Intel Core i9 will not function at full power if you unplug it. I mean, I did that with one of the MSI creators. Here I am playing Control, and now watch as I unplug the machine and I go from like 120 frames per second in this game down to 30. And the computer immediately cuts you off. So I'm really tired of all of the nerd tryhards in my videos. Like, I just recently put out another video just saying Windows on ARM is ready for more capable hardware. The operating system is great. What Microsoft has been able to do is incredible. And if you're a tinkerer, if you're an enthusiast, an actual enthusiast, and not just a lazy, apathetic tech nerd, your ability to run Linux and Windows programs, Linux, Windows, and Android programs is kind of incredible. What I can do on this underpowered Windows on ARM, like Robo and Kala, yeah, it's not great. But people are complaining like, oh, but it's going to be terrible for gaming. And you're like, I don't think so. Windows on ARM isn't the problem. I can play Control at 20 frames per second on a Robo Ancala. Would you want to play Control at 20 frames per second? No. So don't we think the issue is getting more performance? And once we get more performance, your issues with like ARM chips and gaming will probably go away? Oh, but then you have to emulate all of your Windows apps. And that's a problem. Why? if you can run Windows on a MacBook, you're emulating Windows, and it seems to run about as well as a comparably priced Windows laptop natively. So yeah, a bunch of developers are going to have to get off their asses and start making compatible software for ARM. That's not the problem. If they don't have computers to roll that software out to, they're never going to make compatibility first. What they're going to need to see is that people are interested in a higher performance, lower battery draw computer like a MacBook. And then they'll say, oh, well, we want to be a part of that and we want to make sure we don't lose customers, so we'll update our apps. But this has been a part of the laziness. It's like I see it in phone reviews a lot, but I'm starting to see it more and more in PC and laptop commentary. I'm a tech enthusiast, and I'm learned about technology because I know how to search wikis. I will not change any of my behavior at all. What you need to do is spoon-feed me exactly the same experience that I've already crafted for myself, which is unique to my needs as a computer consumer, and then maybe I'll deign a new computer or platform with some potential for me to consider the possibility of maybe transitioning to that in the future, but I probably won't because I'm lazy and apathetic and I will never change my behavior because I deserve to be catered to the extremist. And that's the tone, and that's a crappy tone because it completely ignores every trend we're seeing in PCs and and electronics. And moving forward, there's a reason why ARM is being singled out as the transition point away from x86. I hope this means that Intel and AMD are really going to get after x86 efficiency. I think we've gone a few too many years with yet again, you know, like Intel kind of racing for a performance crown at any energy cost. But I don't think x86 is going to be able to turn that around in the next two or three generations and catch the incredible efficiencies that we've seen from ARM. Just the threat from Apple with the M-series chips doesn't seem to have motivated Intel to significantly redirect their energies towards performance per watt. The MacBook crushes if we're talking performance per watt. If you're talking about the performance crown at any energy cost, yeah, that's still Intel in terms of single core benchmarking performance, but at substantially higher energy costs than even what you might get out of an AMD system. So it's telling that NVIDIA is looking at maybe dabbling back again with ARM CPUs. AMD has been talking about some investments in what they might be able to do with ARM CPUs. MediaTek is looking like they might release a new Companio. That's the chip that they use in their tablets and then their Chromebooks, because they will probably want to get on board Windows on ARM. Like, tech enthusiasts who think they know what they're talking about, looking at this market but going, but I have to use an x86 application that hasn't been updated since Windows 7. That's what average consumers care about, is legacy software. And I promise you, every single time I've handed someone like my Robo and Kala, and I say, like, you could use this all day. And they're like, oh yeah, but I mean, like, you know, like Windows all day. You're like, no, like Android all day. And they're like, but there are no fans. I mean, it runs a little warm, but how can it cool itself if there aren't any fans making a ton of noise? And you're like, because it's more efficient. Oh, and you can still play some games on it? Yeah. Look, here's Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, playing at 10 frames per second. You won't want to play it that way, but you can. Well, let me get a drink of coffee here. And again, this whole notion of techies, where they're trying to speak for the lowest estimation of what they think an average consumer is, completely ignoring that most of these so-called average consumers could probably get all of their work done on a mid-spec Chromebook in like the $300 to $400 range. So if they're willing to step away from some of the apps and services and UI that they're familiar with to get an inexpensive web browsing machine that can handle their needs, why are we concerned about them needing to change up a few of the apps that they would use on a Windows on ARM machine? That makes no sense. That argument immediately falls apart for the people they say they're the most concerned about. It is so patently, it's such a low effort, dishonest criticism to throw at the future of Windows on ARM. That's what consumers care about. Obviously they don't, because I've had a couple of family members in my circles of family and friends who are like, oh, well, I wanted to buy a new laptop, but really what I wanted was, like, I didn't want to always have to look for a charger. And then they moved to a MacBook. And guess what? They're using totally different apps and services on their MacBook, and they seem to be getting everything done just fine. And for their needs, I was so excited when I saw that they had opted for a MacBook. Because what they cared about most was being able to do these things away from an outlet. And I didn't want to have to field that tech support call like, hey, is there any way that I can run my Acer with a Core i7 better when I'm on the road? Because the answer is going to be no, unless you want to invest in a bunch of portable batteries to try and keep that thing topped off. And you have to buy big enough batteries that you can supply the correct wattage for that charger. And how many times we've seen, like, even Lenovo, business grade machines, and they've got this great little Windows Core i7 machine. And then they give you a charger that can't supply the wattage that the machine draws. So if you use that machine and you're really using it at, like, its full performance, you're still draining the battery. The charger is only slowing your battery drain because it can't keep up with the power demands of the laptop. And I just feel that's dumb. And I feel like so many people would be willing to say, like, okay, that ancient program that you've been using to do this and this, well, you're going to have to move to this other app because that old program is incompatible. But now when you want to use your laptop on a road trip, it'll go hours before you need to even think about plugging it in. I just spat all over my keyboard. And all you have to do is switch from this app to that app. And they're going to be like, cool, thanks. I don't get it. I don't get this apathetic. I need it to be exactly the thing that it's always been for me in the past, but with like a 5% improvement to CPU performance. Like, that's not a tech fan. That's apathy. That's an entrenched, I need everything to just cater to exactly the way, and I won't change my behavior to get a better solution. And I won't acknowledge that other people on the planet exist who are different than me. I might be way off here. If there's something I'm missing and you've really used Windows on ARM and then, you know, there is a glaring hole in this operating system strategy, please clue me in because I'm not seeing it. I'm really not. The first machine I reach for when I'm not editing video at this massive workstation is my Robo Ancala. It's sleek. It's got an amazing OLED screen. I don't think about plugging it in, so it goes for a whole week, really, and just kind of popping it up, writing out some notes, closing it down, firing up a web browser. I've done most of my thumbnails when I'm sitting on the couch, a little pen support, and I'm firing up GIMP, and I'm, you know, moving layers around. It's not as fast as my beefy workstation. My beefy workstation is in a steel server chassis that really should have two people lifting and moving it. Yeah, I don't know that I'm breaking any news here, but a Qualcomm Snapdragon 8cx Gen 3 ARM chipset, not as powerful as a second generation Threadripper and an NVIDIA RTX 4070 Ti. Oh, noes. But I'm telling you, like, I fire up my Vivo, my X100 Pro, and if Geekbench is in any way reliable, they say their scores should be comparable between mobile chipsets and desktop chipsets. I don't think that's really true, but if they are accurate, in any way for the kind of compute workloads that we can put on a phone and compare that against a laptop with an x86 CPU, the Dimensity 9300 is as powerful as a 12th generation Intel Core i7. And while it's shocking for a phone to see that that CPU can draw like 12 watts at full load, it is as powerful as a Core i7, only drawing 12 watts. Anyone want to look up what a laptop Core i7 12th gen draws at full load? Because I think it's a bit more than 12 watts. I feel like our phones are so much more efficient for that performance per watt, for the workload they can really achieve. And what we are dealing with is getting more developers to support them with good software. But if I have to switch from editing in DaVinci Resolve, and then I just got to, you know, kind of cut something together real quick on my phone, it renders faster on my phone than it does on this beefy workstation. So the time I lose in editing on a touchscreen, I gain back in rendering really high quality 4K video. Dave Burns, when your Core i7 is off, it draws 0 watts, which is exactly how you should use that i7 on the road. I want to say TDP on a 12th gen Core i7 is it 28 watts or is it 30 watts? I honestly can't remember. I used to memorize all this stuff, but now I just look it up. I got lazy myself. But I want to say that, like, you've got comparable scores in a synthetic benchmarking app like Geekbench at 1/3 the power draw. And the fact that we aren't putting these in our laptops, especially our consumer and student grade laptops, is shocking to me. I've been ready since the Snapdragon 855. Put a Snapdragon 855 with active cooling in a Chromebook, and you have a monster Chromebook. And ever since then, we've been getting more and more and more compute power. What are we doing with it? I don't care what form factor the compute power comes in. I only care that it has more compute power and I can do more stuff with it. Yeah, I've been curious about this too, Michael. Michael Corcoran says, the Chromebook Plus models only seem to be applicable on x86 chips for some reason. Maybe if Snapdragon... Maybe Snapdragon stopped making those chips for Chromebooks last year. I'll be curious to see. So part of this is Microsoft has had something of an exclusivity with Qualcomm for making Windows on ARM. In trying to develop an ARM-based operating system, Microsoft has struggled for a long time. All the way back to like the earliest days of Windows 8 and Windows RT. Absolutely, Microsoft deserves a ton of mocking, but also a lot of scrutiny and criticism over how they've tried to dabble with more mobile devices. I don't think anyone would argue with that. But once this exclusivity ends, that's why I think we're hearing these little leaks and rumors, these little bubbles of interest from other silicon manufacturers. And I would say one of the driving competitive forces in like Chromebooks has been MediaTek. So I'll be really curious to see if, like, again, give me a Dimensity 9300 with active cooling in a Chromebook, and I'm very confident that chip will significantly outperform a Core i5, a two-generation-old Core i5, with a significant savings for the battery life. And it won't matter if you call it a Plus or a Chromebook Pro or something like that. it will be a comparably powerful machine that gets better battery life. And I think especially someone who uses a Chromebook would be very interested in that combination. But unfortunately, I don't think we can get there until we see that this is kind of opened up a bit and that companies like MediaTek know that they can sell a purpose-built laptop-grade chip beyond just the absolute cheapest Chromebooks. When you can see a MediaTek sticker on a Windows machine, then it opens the floodgates. Then it makes sense for them to throw Dimensity stuff all over the place. Yeah, Lax Pro, I still don't believe that Geekbench is legit here, but Lax Pro says, my Snapdragon 865 scores a single, I'm assuming this is a single core, 1185, my Ryzen 7, 1199. I've been playing with these little mini PCs, and often, especially for AMD, a little less so for Intel, AMD will significantly outperform in multi-core performance. But you get that single-core score, and I don't see it. I don't see how it can be totally true, but Geekbench says for their benchmarks, for their tests, those should be comparable results. I know I see it when I run a video render through LumaFusion. It is capable of shockingly fast performance on that Dimensity 9300. So I feel we've been overlooking a lot of compute power over the last several years. Oh, Lax Pro. Yeah, that was single core. Multi-core is 2000 point difference, but still. Again, a 2000 point difference in multi-core, that is significant. But I would also imagine that at full load, a Ryzen 7 is probably tripling the power draw of your Snapdragon 865. It's a Snapdragon 865. That is 4 years ago. I'm trying not to sound like was it Jeremy Piven from Gross Point Blank. 10 years. That's 4 years ago. That's an eternity in technology. And we still keep pretending like, oh, this new Intel chip is 7% faster than the last Intel chip. And you're like, I don't know that I care. Going from a Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 to a Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 was shocking performance improvements across the board, incredible GPU performance, incredible CPU performance, and they cut power draw year over year. So miss me with the most outright, obviously powerful system at any power cost and find me a better performance per watt. Let's see. Blue Man Rule. Intel Core i5 12400 has base TDP from 65 watts up to 117 watts. Lax Pro. That's the funny part. It's 10 times. It's a 10 watt chip versus a 105 watt chip. I don't know. I think short story incredibly long. I really need to focus more time on Windows on ARM for this year. And hopefully it can still kind of dovetail with some of the conversations we might have about things like Android apps. Like I might start doing like, hey, this was a fun little Android app and I could sideload it on my Windows machine and now this is cool. It's running natively here and it's running better than any premium Android tablet you can buy. And it mixes directly with your Windows apps. You don't have to like dual boot or detach a keyboard or do anything. It's working exactly the way, like Threads. So before we got good web support, browser support for Threads, I was still using it on my Windows machines because I would sideload the Android APK. And it worked great. You just do like a little like skinny dock to the side and there's your Threads feed in the app just like it was on your phone. Brilliant. Worked great. Why not do more of that? You know, like I'm not expecting like my great aunt to be able to figure out how to sideload an APK using the Android subsystem for Windows. But if you're telling me you're a tech enthusiast and you're seeking out videos like mine to complain about legacy x86 software running on Windows and ARM in an emulation layer, and you can't figure out how to sideload an APK, maybe you're not as tech enthusiasty as you think you are. I'm just putting that challenge out there to all the people that seem to have so many issues with Windows on ARM. There was another question in here that I wanted to get to, but I'm very good at going off on the tangents. Let me get another drink of water. Gormlord says, I'd like to see you do more stuff with Modbox, Wine, Box64, Cassia, etc. on Android. And I am playing with some of that. So the first one that I think I might do, it's not even going to be a super deep dive. It's not going to be mega technical because I've got a lot of stuff that I need to catch up on to understand how to get better results out of it. But I've been really impressed with WinLater. And one of the first programs that I loaded into WinLater was Audacity. So if you go to my Patreon, you'll see I run all these performance tests like video rendering and podcast mixing and batch photo processing. And I think I might add an emulated Audacity to that test. So I set up a project and then I see how long it might take to convert that down to an MP3 that I could share on a podcasting service. Like it's a lot of compression, but it's a lot of compression in an emulated Windows space running an x86 program. It's running Audacity. And that seems to be consistent enough that I can run it on multiple different phones and then say, like, you know, we talk about your phone maybe potentially replacing a laptop. And here we go. It's kind of doing it. It's kind of making this work. So that's absolutely something that I'm looking at taking a look at. I mean, if only it's just for my own edification. And then if I can find some other really good, maybe two-generation-old AAA games that you can run in a good emulation space, I want to show that instead of showing off something like Genshin Impact. I'm so tired of people saying, I use Genshin as a benchmark for Android because it's so poorly optimized for Android, but then I directly compare those results against running Genshin on the iPhone, where we know Genshin is much better optimized for the iPhone. And like, you're not really giving us an oranges-to-oranges comparison. That's not a legit way to benchmark things. It's kind of the way that you give Apple a performance per watt win. Because we know that as close as we can compare those two, that game on two different platforms, that the Android side is now starting to outperform the iOS side, but at a slightly higher power draw. So if Genshin Impact were properly optimized for Android in the way that it has been properly optimized for iOS, we would see a significant improvement in scores over a comparable year or comparable generation of iPhone. But that's on the developer. So I'm not going to sit here and play a game I don't really like. I don't really like Genshin Impact. And then use that as data to try and tell you about performance improvements in Android land when, oh yeah, I mean like the iPhone gets 2 frames per second less, but it draws like 2 watts less power at peak performance. And you're like, no, that's so dumb. Don't do that. But if I show you a game that is really well optimized for Android, like Alien Isolation is surprisingly well done for Android. And now I can use that and I can kind of open up, like you can go into the little settings document and edit like what kind of frame rate that you'd want the game to try and reach. And when I can show you even a Dimensity is playing this game at an average above 100 frames per second, how are we not crazy excited about that kind of performance from a phone? I've got a Steam Deck where I see chug on Alien Isolation where the game can't sustain 60 frames per second smoothly at 720p unless I go in and I really kind of tweak in some of the performance settings and I'm playing around with my FSR and stuff like that. My Steam Deck is a wonderful, capable little mini computer, and I adore it for gaming. I play more games on my Steam Deck than I do on my beefy rig here. But then I can pick up a phone, and I can almost double the sustained frame rate of my Steam Deck on a phone, which does not have active cooling. Which means if I add, like, one of these little like coolers. So if I don't mind the fan noise of a Steam Deck, I'm certainly not going to mind the fan noise of a little clip-on thermoelectric cooler. I can keep a higher sustained frame rate on my phone. So again, it's not a problem of compute power and platform. It's trying to convince developers that if you take the time to really make a good port, we want to get consumers excited about that and ready to support it and to pay for it. I've purchased Alien Isolation on three different platforms now. I love that game. I'm willing to buy it pretty much anywhere else it might show up. But for good reason. On Android, it's actually now one of the best versions of the game. Like, when you really want to play it in its nicest, most fluid kind of state, and I don't give up on the fancy things like the chromatic aberrations and the kind of film grain look that the game supports, that's all on Android 2. It's really nice. I like it a lot. Well, let me get another drink of water here. Oh, yeah, Gabaletta. My laptop with a 330-watt charger can't keep up with the power draw of the laptop to keep the battery maintained. Not even charge it, just maintain it. And that's the same thing that I found with that Creator, the MSI, is it is so aggressive in power management. The charger, the brick that MSI includes with their Creator line is beefy enough to hold you in place. But if you're running that thing super hard with like GPU rendering and DaVinci Resolve, your battery isn't charging. Your battery is kind of staying put because there's just so much power going through that system. And like the heat on that battery is another massive concern for the performance of the system. So I am so sorry. There was another question in here before we got totally sidetracked. And I wanted to get back to it because it was a good question, and I was going to try and talk about it. James McDonald. Hi, Juan. Do you have any recommendations for ANC headphones for someone with autism and sensory issues? So, James, I come from a family of engineers, and we are hyper-aggressively puppy-dog-like individuals. I will never claim that I am on the spectrum or that I am dealing with clinically assessed issues with ADHD, but I know I am very sensitive to stimulus, and I've worked my entire life to kind of track down what it is that seems to kind of trigger me in different situations. So when it comes to ANC issues, first, the age of the issue definitely needs to be taken into consideration. Because I feel one of the things that happens like in younger individuals is we're giving them products that aren't really a great fit for their biology. I just recently did a headphone review. The Puro Sound little kid Bluetooth ANC headphones. It is a big deal that they have made a nice premium tier headphone, but with smaller ear cups for smaller people. And also, like, if there's like a lady in your life who is very, very petite, funnily enough, headphones made for kids might fit their ears better. And when the fit is more comfortable and it's more biologically correct, sound quality improves, isolation improves, so it helps block more sound passively, and then you get bigger and better benefits out of the active noise cancellation as well. So first of all, that's the major thing. I actually don't have one kind of recommendation. For me, when it comes to something like you're wanting to use headphones because you're trying to find not only just good entertainment value, but also good passive focus. It contributes to your ability to focus on a task. I like headphones and I like features that include things like white noise generators. So I think Soundcore does this pretty well, where you get some Soundcore headphones, you go into the Soundcore app, And now the newest version of the Soundcore app has these little kind of like plug-in modules where you can create your own white noise or background noise environment, where you can do things like, they have a whole tab that's like restaurant sounds. They have a whole tab that's nature sounds. They have a whole tab that's weather sounds. And you can sit there and you can say, I want to hear rain in a cafe while people are eating. And you can put like three things together and change the volume on each thing, so that you've got sensory information coming from the headphones that's not going to be as distracting as music, and you can control the soundscape for how that all goes through. I know OnePlus earbuds also have a really good set of, it's not as customizable, but it's a really good set of pre-created white noise generating machines. And so like on the OnePlus Buds Pro, you would long press and then it would kick over into a sort of a sound mode, and it would give you this kind of white noise or background noise for that. First and foremost, fit is the most important part, especially for someone who's already sensitive to sensory issues. An uncomfortable fit is immediately going to be a deal breaker. They have to be the type of wearable that is so perfectly right for their skull that they can immediately ignore that it's on their head. Some people are going to be more sensitive to that than others, but especially if you're already dealing with sensory issues, ADHD and autism, that you need to pay very, very, very close attention to that first. And then from there, you can look at some of the other features that might benefit that individual. And if you can't find those directly built into the headphones, there are a ton of apps and other services that you can use, let alone just also kind of creating some of this stuff on your own. Get a free program like Audacity. You can edit audio really well in DaVinci Resolve for free and do things like, hey, I just got this 4-hour recording from YouTube of, sitting by a lake, and it's 4 hours of just hearing like water kind of wave in and out from a lake, and you can hear like a boat on a dock like bumping against the dock, and you take that and you dump it into DaVinci Resolve, and then you can kind of change up the layers on that, and then maybe also throw on some wind-blown rustling leaves just to kind of mask some of the transitions and the repeat marks, because that was the problem for me. I used to try and sleep with a noise-generating machine, and I had to get rid of it because every single noise had a distinct loop. And so especially like rain, for the first night I had it, the rain was like, oh, I loved the sound of this like rainfall. And then I heard, the second night I had it, I clicked. And every time I hear this kunk kunk, that's the loop. And it was like water torture. I was just sitting there waiting for the kunk kunk. And I couldn't go to sleep. I would not let it go. My brain was latched onto finding the loop and listening for the kunk kunk. Drove me nuts. So I would switch to another. I didn't like the wind one as much, but let me just switch to the wind. It's just something to kind of block out the sound around me. The next night, found exactly where that loop was. Switched to some other. It was I forget. It was like supposed to be crowd noise. I don't know why you would want to fall asleep to crowd noise, but it was like, I was so desperate. So I switched over to crowd noise, and that same night found the loop. And it was just now a game in my brain to defeat the noise generator. So instead now, when we travel with some kind of white noise machine, I actually do get one of the fans. It's not a fan, but it's basically something that spins, and then you can twist the case to change the pitch and the tone of the thing that's just making a constant droning sound. And now we travel with one of those too, so that all three of us can kind of just block out like noises around our hotel. But sorry, I've gone off on a tangent again. Fit and finish, find some really, really good features that can kind of complement good fit and finish. And then from there, I think you'll have a good recipe for success in helping someone deal with sensory issues. I'm exactly that kind of guy who will now bring earbuds to crowded events. My daughter, she just started playing softball, and they did this really, really cute parade we went out to the high school, and all the girls, like, they dressed up for their team theme. They had, like, a little banner announcing their team, and they did, like, kind of a short little dance to music. And the PA systems that they were using were so overcranked and harsh and distorting. It wasn't too loud. I actually measured the sound. It was something like 90 dB right up front. So if you were in the stands, like, you were fine. It wasn't like an OSHA violation in loudness. But the sound was so piercing and harsh, I popped in some earbuds, turned on the ANC, and then just left them not playing anything. And it's the only way that I could have survived sitting through this cute little parade. It was so awful. I hated it so much. And then I put in my earbuds and I'm like, ah, oh. It's like I could feel all the muscles in my back like unclench as soon as I wasn't getting punched in the ear by a cheap PA system.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Do you like podcasts about tech?
Oh, yeah.
Do you like podcasts about tech where you... See, I already f***ed it up. That's okay, because I don't want to stop the recording because then we got to redo it all. So I'll just put it apart. Do you like podcasts?
Yeah.
Do you like podcasts about tech?
Hell yeah.
Do you like podcasts about tech that have your favorite creators like Juan Carlos Bagnell, TK Bay, and many, many more?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you do, you should check out the Nomad Tech Project with Sam and Joe. It's a podcast about everything tech. And sport and food and getting to know your favorite creators from the back end. Like, you know, you could watch their podcast and hear what they have to say about tech. But where did they go to high school? What did they like to do before they became a podcaster or a tech creator or a YouTuber or a Twitch streamer? Just check us out. We're on every Sunday from 3 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. BST in the UK.
Ish.
We'd love to have you. Maybe throw a sub and tell your friends about it. Again, Nomad Tech Project with Sam and Joe on your favorite podcast aggregators. Take care. Love your faces. Be excellent to each other. We'll see you on the show.
Goodbye.
Simon says, no, I watched an Arrested Development documentary last night, and David Cross ranting about Fox reminded me of Juan. Can you send me a link to that? I would absolutely just love to kind of listen to David Cross go unhinged. Oh, Michael Corker and Barry at the dentist. That's stressful. Yeah, we were just talking about, like, face infections and stuff. I hope he's doing okay. I hope it's not like a root canal or a filling or anything like that. Aditya Anil, the rains that fall be blessed. And from, there we go. From Murder, I created my own noise for sleeping because of the looping and my brain's finding annoying frequencies after some time. I cannot stress this enough. You don't need to be an audio engineer. You don't need to know anything about, you know, the intricacies of editing audio or video. Audacity is free. If you don't like some of the recent, because Audacity got bought out by like another developer, but it really wasn't as bad as I think a lot of people were trying to make it out to be. But there is also another free fork of Audacity. I think it's called something like Tenacity. You want to make sure it's like the most open source you could make a version of Audacity open source. You can get that. Or you can also pick up, it looks really intimidating and it's really robust, but editing audio in DaVinci Resolve is pretty nice. Ever since switching over to DaVinci Resolve, I have not bothered with installing Adobe software. I used to live out of Adobe Audition, especially for voiceover work. I haven't bothered with Pro Tools. I've given up on all of the old Sony software like SoundForge and Acid, and there's another like Magix Music Maker, because Sony sold off all of those really great audio editing apps to Magix. I haven't really bothered. I do occasionally fire up SoundForge because I really like SoundForge's noise reduction plugin, but you're not going to care about that. Literally, you're not going to care about that because you're trying to create noise. You're not trying to reduce noise in a recording. I can't tell you how amazingly empowering it can be to say, I really need to fall asleep with this kind of background sound. And then you can make exactly that kind of background sound, and then you can make it for as long as you want it to play. So it's not on a loop. You can create the sort of patterns in the sound files that would help you not be able to hear exactly when things are looping, or if there are frequencies in there that are kind of grating or annoying to your ears. And then you can just let it run and you can do it for free. And even doing it like the very, very first time, from installing Audacity to getting a piece of audio out, we're talking something that, if you have any curiosity for this stuff, should maybe take you like an hour. And I think that's an hour well spent. From Steve Pogue. As someone on the spectrum, I recommend the sound. I second the Soundcore recommendation. I have the Space One and Space A40, and they serve me well. Also, at big crowded events, I bring some IEMs to use as sound dampeners. It helps pay attention to the important sounds and better tolerate the other noises. And I've even started wearing earbuds and earplugs in movie theaters. It helps reduce all of the crowd chewing sounds all around me. I don't think... So there was recently like another article that kind of came out about people complaining about some of the theatrical run for Oppenheimer. And it seems to be a thing that Christopher Nolan seems to fall into this trap a lot. It seems he edits and mixes his movies for the best possible theatrical experience someone can find. And that is not the reality for most moviegoers out there, that they're going to be in a really good IMAX or really good Dolby Atmos situation. So then you listen to the mix on Tenet and like, yeah, I can totally hear how people would have a really hard time hearing what's being said in this film, or Bane in The Dark Knight Rises, or the really like self-important kind of grounded, I'm mumblecore acting my way through the historical significance of the atomic bomb from Oppenheimer. I feel like Christopher Nolan needs to start doing like the lo-fi audio test for some of his movies. Or at least let an editor come up with a sound mix for cheap movie theater that has crappy sound system. But if you've ever worked in recording, one of the things that you often will do is take a band, you're trying to get the mix right on a song, and you'll take it out to like the worst car stereo out in the parking lot. And if it sounds pretty good on the worst car stereo out in the parking lot, then you're probably heading in the right direction. If it only sounds good on the most amazing near-field monitors or the most expensive headphones in the studio, you're kind of doing it wrong, because that's not how most people are going to listen to your mix. So, going to the movie theater, this really happened with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. I had earplugs in for that whole movie. It was just piercingly loud, and it was really difficult to kind of hear what was going on, because everything was just sort of a jumbled mess in that audio mix. And I had Lex on her last generation Puros, because even she was complaining like, oh, this is really loud. And so she's wearing her noise canceling headphones and she could hear the movie better. So I just think we're not doing a good enough job of kind of sharing those hearing health experiences. And I put out the video on the new Puro headphones, and I think it died at like 700 views. I have 160,000 subscribers. A lot of them have followed me over because of how I used to talk about camera tech and audio tech. And apparently only 700 people on the internet care about better headphones for their kids. So YouTube has already completely killed that review. Oh yeah, Kapakash and Lax Pro also talking about using fans. One, just to have like airflow in the room, absolutely. And then there's the noise. There's a very consistent but not perfectly looped kind of sound. And so yeah, that kind of stuff definitely helps. JMan150, I sometimes use my Pixel Buds Pro or my XM5s, and I'm also autistic. I think as soon as you find a good, comfortable fit that you can sleep with, I can't sleep with cans on. I actually can't sleep with anything on or in my ears. I just can't do it. I'm a side sleeper, and as soon as like an earbud kind of gets pushed up into my skull from my pillow, I'm awake. I'm terrified. Oh no, what if this like like damages my ear or I'm not paying attention or something like that. So I'm really envious of people, especially people who can like sleep on their back. The only time I can fall asleep on my back is like if I'm on the couch. Just like the worst way to train your body to fall asleep. Don't be like me, is what I'm saying. Don't be a side or stomach sleeper who can't use comfortable headphones. Oh yeah, T-Bubs. Absolutely. So T-Bubs says, have you ever used musician earbuds? They're typically designed to allow sound in, but cut the loud noise by at least 20 dB. So I don't have a pair of musician-style plugs right now, but I still regularly use my Moldeds. So these, again, I've talked about these a lot. These are from Mi Audio. I have them in the fancy case, and they are molded to my ear. Please pardon that they're super gross and discolored because they go in my ears, and ears are filthy. But the cool thing about these molds, if you get molds done with a good brand that tries to support production audio and live audio, I can get these molds fitted with filters. And so there's actually like, it looks like a little air vent in the mold, and that helps reduce certain frequencies of sound to a certain attenuation level, but you can still very clearly hear what's kind of going on around you. I don't do enough live sound or sound reinforcement to spend a lot of money on those, but I've used them in the past. And especially when I was doing a lot of live theater, when I was on the other side of the production, I would regularly kind of pop in some foam, and then someone hipped me to, I don't think it was Edimotics. I can't remember who made them. But it looked like a traditional earplug, but it had a little vent in there. And that's when, like, you know, my brain kind of exploded, like, oh, of course, it's physics. Sound is just physics, and you can do really cool things to change up how our sound works. So, so Colonel Corn Pop asks, do you prefer concert earbuds or just use what you have with you? So one of the reasons why I keep the things with me that I do is because they have proven to work and help me out. I almost always, like if I have my backpack, I almost always have two different pairs of wired IEMs. Just foam tip, something that I know fits me comfortably. I can wear them for hours if I need to. And then I don't even need to plug them into anything. I'll just loop the cables over my ears, kind of tuck the cable into my shirt, and then I'm good to go. On my desk right now, I've got a bunch of Bluetooth earbuds, right? So I still have the OnePlus Buds just because I've been kind of bringing this up a lot in videos and reviews, but I don't wear these very often. For me personally, they don't stay put in my ears. This kind of shallow insertion ear tip doesn't work for me. And again, I could probably do better if I hunted down some good foam tips that would maybe create more of a pressure or a seal on the outside of my ear canal. But I already have those. So I have the Neuras. I forget the full name of these. It's like the Neura True Pro LMNOP Ultimate Edition. Courtesy of Jeff at El Jefe Reviews. He was like, you really got to try these. And so I opted for their squishy foam tips. And then the ones that really do it for me are the Beyerdynamics. So these are the Beyerdynamic Freebird. Freebird! But same thing. I've opted for... Ooh, yeah, super gross. Sorry. Again, I use them a lot. So whenever I hold them up, it's like, oh yeah, there's still some wax on them. You just got to deal with the fact that our biologies are disgusting. And I've opted for the little foam tips. And I got replacement foam tips for these too. The foam tips that come with these were some of my favorite, but switching them out for a couple other different brands, like on them right now, I have the Periodic Audio. So the Periodic Audio foam tips are a little more conical, like they're a little longer, but they still fit in the case. That's one of the problems I also run into is you can switch out the tips, but, like my LGs, I hated the silicone ear tips that came with LG Tone true wireless earbuds, but I couldn't put foam on them because the foam would stick out just enough that the earbud wouldn't fit in the case. So if I have something like that in my pockets, that's usually enough just to give me something. If it's like a 15 dB reduction in ambient sound around me, that's just enough to survive. If I know I'm going to a concert, though, like ever since I got caught without earplugs at a, I can't remember the name of, it was like a drum and bass group in Vegas for CES, like 2 years before the pandemic. I was there with Trisha Hershberger and, and Snubs. That was then when I first met Shannon Morse. And Shannon was just a little daredevil. She would like run up to the security trench and like take photos of the band like immediately under the concert stage. And like she did it so boldly that the security guards would just let her. And then they'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, you can't stand here. This is not where you're allowed to be. But the speaker system was amazing that they played with. I can't remember the name of the group. That's going to drive me crazy. But when they started playing, it was like this concussive force hit my body from middle of the theater. And like, it felt like the air moved me. It was so loud. And I had, what were they? It was the 5-driver. It wasn't the CCA. Yeah, I think it was the KZs. I think I had some of the KZs. And all I could do, like, I'm ruffling through my backpack and I finally find my KZs and I pop them in my ears. And again, it was like palpable tension relief. It was still way too loud, but it was like I cut about 15 dB. And I could just like my body deflated for a minute and just kind of let it all rest. Whenever I know I'm going to be in a concert like situation, I try to bring proper earplugs. But even just being able to pop in some earbuds is enough to help. And it does. It significantly improves my music going and concert going experience. And then at the end of the night, I pop them out of my ears and my ears aren't ringing. It's like I take them out of my ears and like, oh, I can hear everything again. But like, oh yeah, everything's comfortable. Everything's fine. I'm not in any discomfort. I'm not hearing like Charlie Brown teacher voice from people standing right in front of me because my ears are so numb that they tried to reduce like my discomfort. It really is lovely. I highly recommend finding that good fit of passive noise canceling earbuds or headphones or something. And then you just have to be in the habit of always having them with you. It's really nice. I believe it, Simon. Simon says, Hypno says, Nolan's audio is like Game of Thrones using reference monitors for dark scenes and not realizing that ordinary TVs can't show the image they see. Yeah, I agree. I feel like you get too sheltered and too, you don't have anyone telling you no. I feel like Christopher Nolan needs a few people just to say like, hey, I think you should at least try this, or I don't think that's a very good idea. I know it's so much more complicated than that. I'm sure he has a lot of producers and stuff giving him feedback on things. But I like he's gotten to a tier where he's so buffered against the rest of the industry that I think those kinds of things you miss out on. Like Tenet was kind of ruined by that audio mix. I didn't enjoy Tenet until I tried to watch it again on like the most amazing headphones that I had at the time, you know, like some really, really nice expensive planar magnetics. And there's like, oh, okay, I'm picking up details and stuff in here that I could not get at all from my TV with a sound bar. And it's not like I've got, you know, the most amazing television experience you can put together for a home theater, but like, it's a pretty nice sound bar. It's pretty good. I couldn't hear anything. I was like, I'm watching this movie with subtitles. And again, not quite following what's going on. You're missing out on so much. Then I watched the movie again with headphones and I liked it a lot better. Funny how that works. Oh, J-Man, same with you. You're like right in front of me on my desk right now are my XM4s. And the only reason, J-Man150 writes, I usually use my XM5s out in my public, like when I'm out in college. The only reason why I've stuck with the XM4s over the XM5s, XM5s are better in every way, except I want something that can kind of collapse. I want a collapsible headband, even though it makes the headband creakier and noisier, just so that it'll more easily fit in a small, like, camera sling. And that's it. But I, again, I will regularly have these out. Like, hey, I want to get a little writing done, but I also just kind of want to be outside. Let me go to a coffee shop. I can't handle the clinking and the smacking and the slurping and all of the human noises around me. So I throw these on and I pull up like a lo-fi audio playlist and I've blocked everything out and I've got like kind of my good focus music. It's delicious. So yeah, anytime you find like one of those really great solutions that kind of keeps you on track or keeps you on point like that, it's worth its weight in gold. It really is. DTNL, me audio. Tisk, tisk, comrade. It took me a second longer than it should have to get that joke, Aditya. Well played. Very well played. let me get down. Oh, Aditya, my ears just can't deal with foam ear tips and ANC. A good seal is all that I can hope for when it comes to IEMs. But a good seal is half the battle. Seriously, a good seal on a pair of just, you know, earbuds that can kind of like wedge in there. Because again, the pressure that builds up with ANC can be very uncomfortable for some people. Technology is never a one-way improvement. When you change up the acoustic dynamics of a speaker system or an audio system, it almost always comes with drawbacks. And if you're sensitive to other aspects of the acoustic spectrum, like the pressure that can kind of feel around the ear or the lack of location, spatial information around you. My dad was doing really sensitive work with lasers when he was in the military. And one of the experiments, he had to go into an anechoic chamber. And he was allowed to bring me and my brother in. And it was one of the most unsettling experiences of my childhood. I mean, it was cool and we were freaking out and like lasers and all this cool stuff. And like, look what happens when your voice just kind of disappears. But like, as someone who also suffers from a lot of motion sickness, it was an unsettling feeling not having the echo, the echoes and reflections that help you determine your position in space. It didn't make me motion sick, but it also left me very unsettled. I was very uncomfortable being in that room. So Aditya, like if you can just passively block some of the noise happening around you, and like I'm saying, like maybe it's a 10 to 15 dB cut on the sound around you. That's not incredible, but it's so helpful when you're trying to focus on something specific or you want to hear something specifically, but you're just trying to minimize distraction sound or distortion sound around you. Like that, again, a good cheap pair of IEMs with ear tips that fit you correctly, worth their weight in gold, plus a couple extra bucks. Amazing. Absolutely incredible. Blue Man Rule. That Game of Thrones call is truth. So disappointing. I can't think of another property that absolutely abandoned and disappointed its audience more aggressively than Game of Thrones. To the point where I still talk about the audience fallout more than the actual show, for how incredible that show was as a television event. Like, how many people I know that stuck with it and will never revisit that show ever again. And I have so many shows where even if I don't love, like, completely maybe how it ended, there are still parts of the show that I would want to go back and revisit. Every year, I've got to rewatch Halt and Catch Fire. It's just something clicks in my brain and like, I need that nostalgia from when I was a kid and we had floppy disks and I need to see Lee Pace be an insufferable D-bag and I'm going to rewatch this show. And I just have to go through the entire thing and I sob like a child when we get to the conclusion of Scoot McNairy's story. You know, like I just need that moment for some reason and I just got to do it. I will never revisit Game of Thrones. There is nothing redeemable about going back. I don't know, I guess like I'll watch a few clips from like The Red Wedding, I guess. I am not interested in that at all anymore. So it's, yeah, it's definitely true. It's got that feel to it for sure. From Cake Batter, I worked in the ultra high-end audio industry, and Nolan movies just have bad vocal mixing. And Simon says Hypno is kind of backing this up a little. I saw an interview where he said the audio was deliberate. It did have the best background artists, though. So Cake Batter, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm not pulling this up to, like, you know, to pick on you. My experiences with Tenet, when I went from using our TV soundbar to using my Odysseys, my planar magnetics, I don't disagree that the mix for where the voice lives in all of the environment that the voice is supposed to live in, I guess what I'm trying to find words for, and I'm very bad at explaining stuff like this. I guess I just wouldn't use words like good or bad. I feel Christopher Nolan is such an auteur that he's trying to do something with realism that doesn't help the cinema experience. I think he's so impressed with how profound and important his cinema is that he's trying to give us an incredible spectacle, but also in a way that's grounded and realistic and edgy and profound. And that's what kind of comes forward in his audio mix for me. It's a fantastic event, but he's trying to impress upon us the realism of the fantasy, when I need someone in his team to say, you know, it's better for the fantasy if it's just fantasy. We don't need the realism of the audio and how the voice is going to disappear in these chaotic events. What we need is the audience to be able to hear this crucial line of dialogue, even though there is chaos surrounding the performer. And that, to me, becomes the artistic decision that's being made that gets in the way of Nolan as a storyteller. And there are feelings that I have like that with Oppenheimer, too. So when that's exacerbated by a movie theater that hasn't really done a good job of setting up their sound system or tuning their sound system for these types of movies, it's like a double whammy. I don't agree with Nolan's assessment. Because I'm taking huge liberties with what I feel I hear in a Nolan film. But when I hear that, that's kind of the conclusion I draw, is there's an artistic decision being made that it's supposed to sound like this because of something that drives the feeling of the spectacle. And when you're sitting in one of Nolan's screening theaters, which I'm sure is impeccably tuned for what Nolan is trying to accomplish, I'm sure it contributes to that artistic experience. The second you're outside of that environment, it sounds like garbage. It sounds awful. Again, until you can do something kind of ridiculous, like I'm going to watch a Nolan film on, again, an expensive DAC amp combo and the most expensive headphones that I have, I don't feel you should need that kind of investment in specific acoustic tools to appreciate the spectacle of cinema. I disagree with this. My movie was really made to be shown on only one of five theaters in the United States. I feel at that point you've kind of crawled up your own rear, and you need someone to go in after you and kind of pull you back out and say, hey, if you're really trying to celebrate the experience of cinema and going to the movies, maybe you need to go to the cheapest second-run community movie theater in your neighborhood and watch Godzilla Minus One. Because I saw Godzilla Minus One on kind of a dinky screen and with not a very good speaker system. And that movie was a trip. That movie was a roller coaster ride of kaiju proportions. Loved it. absolutely should have seen it on a better, bigger screen with a better, bigger sound system. But you know what I didn't have a problem with was following the thread of the plot, because the audio mix got in the way of people speaking. So I'm sorry, like Cake Batter, that was, I mean, I completely agree with the sentiment. To me, it is one of artistic decisions getting in the way of what we value in a community experience. So I'm sorry, I'm absolutely not picking on you. I very, very much agree with you, but I'm always kind of looking for a motive and a reason for why something like that plays out the way that it does.
The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, meaudio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show.
Oh, okay. So J-Man150 was saying, Juan, I think you might have been typing too fast when you were doing the title for the last stream of the best of our week. Oh, yeah. I need to go in there and fix that. So actually, TK set up that stream. So I did not think to go back and fix it. I think if you go and catch the audio version of the show, the title should be correct. So I'll go in there and I'll fix it on YouTube, J-Man. Thanks for that. Sorry, hold on. Okay, Cake Batter. We all talk about it at the Cetia Expos. Nothing worse than listening to a customer who bought a $150,000 system complain about the dialogue in Tenet. Well, you need to turn to that person and just say, well, you probably haven't set it up properly. Because Christopher Nolan knows what he's doing in making movies, and he thinks it sounds great. So it's probably a problem with your $150,000 setup. I'm just saying, you know, you're probably holding it wrong if this were an Apple product. That's hilarious. Simon says, if no, I totally threw my buddy TK Bay under the bus. Absolutely. Just shoved him right under. He helped set up and now does most of the management on the YouTube side. And I set up and do most of the follow-up stuff on the audio side. So when the audio podcast for Best of Our Week is delayed, that's a me problem. When the title is, there's maybe something misspelled in the title of the podcast on YouTube, that's usually a TK problem. T-Bubs. Juan, have you ever checked out the show Eureka? I really enjoyed it and would wonder what you would think about it. I adored the zany, madcap, sci-fi light storytelling in Eureka. It's such a charming show, an incredible ensemble cast, and it fell into one of those productions where, like, the entire cast, I feel... like we should have seen them in more stuff. I can't remember the name of the main character, the guy who plays the sheriff of the small town in Eureka, but like, I know he's done other projects. I just mean, like, it's such a shame that he didn't go on to kind of headline another show. He fell into that kind of that trap of he was the lead character on a sci-fi show, S-Y-F-Y, cable program. And then I don't feel he ever really got the light that he deserved in other projects. But the show itself, that's one I should actually kind of go back and rewatch. I know there were some sticky years in the middle. I want to say it was season 3. I don't remember. It might not have been that deep into the show's run. But there was a... They did a... So at the time, one of the ways that a lot of these cable shows would help monetize was in the middle of the show, there would be some kind of sponsored advertising. Okay? I remember specifically in an episode of Psych where they're talking about sneaking up on someone. So, boy, it's a good thing that we've got this hybrid car that can drive silently on the electric motors up to 5 miles an hour. And all I have to do is put into the computer, the nav computer here in this brand name car, that's what we're going to do. And then we can roll up on this person and they won't hear us coming. And there, I forget what that's called. It's like entrenched advertising or something like that. I do remember one of the worst episodes of Eureka was someone was doing some kind of like fusion experiment and it accidentally created a second star in the air above this town in Eureka. And it was causing the temperatures to skyrocket and like car tires were melting and things were catching on fire. And there's like a whole sequence where like they have to apply like a special gel or sunscreen or something to themselves to protect them. And I think it was in the same episode. They had a marketing relationship with Degree Antiperspirants. And in this fancy, you know, billion-dollar lab science facility, a character walks around a corner and they're just standing in front of a stacked crates of Degree Antiperspirant before they go off to save the day and turn off the sun that's causing everybody to sweat. So... That was like the low point of the show is when they were trying to do those kinds of like sponsored advertising, inserted ads into the show. But no, the show was incredible. I loved it. It was charming and it was quirky and it was fun. It was a really silly show, even when they started playing with like alternate timelines and some of the darker aspects of like science fiction. They always did it with a really lighthearted flair. So I really liked Eureka. And now it makes me want to go and look up the cast and see what else they've been working on. I can't remember the actor who played the sheriff. I can't remember his name. But he had just such an easily accessible kind of aw shucks. Like, he feels like he came out of, like, 1950s television. And it was just so damn charming. Such a great performance. So I that's one I absolutely need to revisit. Especially just because I know I haven't watched it in years. I always love to kind of look back and see, like, how well has this aged? I wonder if I would still like it as much now today. I think I would. Aditi Anil, way to support your co-host, Juan. Remind me not to pick you up on my dodgeball team. Oh, no, the balls are coming from inside the house. Ah, I keep getting hit in the back of the head. What are you doing, Juan? Love it. Oh, T-Bubs. That's a good feeling for a show. I streamed Eureka later, and when I got near the end, I purposely waited to watch the last 5 episodes because I didn't want to let it go. It's like, oh, the ending is coming, and I really don't want to do the ending again because it makes me sad. And there are so many of those shows where it's like, ah, I really wish I could have more of this, but I'm so glad I didn't get more in a bad way. Like, I'll still go back and rewatch some of Arrested Development, but I do not mess with the Netflix seasons because they are mean and they're mean-spirited and they're dark and it's not funny and it's not cute and it's not shenanigans. It's just kind of ugly. But, you know, the original broadcast series, I love that. So, like, I'll stick with that and then purposely tap out as you kind of get through the second season. Product placement, Malik. Thank you. That is the phrase I was looking for. A product placement, or there's another word for like inserted advertisement, but yeah, product placement was kind of what I was looking for. Colonel Corn Pop, The Walking Dead and the Hyundai. Anyone in that car would be safe for the episode while inside that car. It's also kind of the same thing. I wrote up that editorial on Apple. Apple exercises a ton of editorial influence over movies and TV. And I still, to this day, adore what Rian Johnson did with Apple products in the movie Knives Out. So if you watch Knives Out, the killer or the bad guy is not allowed to use Apple products. Apple says, you can't ever show our products being used by, like, the villain of your piece. But Rian Johnson maliciously complies with that. And he's literally putting Apple products in the most hateful people's hands. Like, if someone has an iPad, they might be a Nazi or a some other kind of white supremacist, or, like, just a really, really hateful, like, parody of a right-wing ultra alt-right kind of individual, or a thief stealing money from her parents in the most wishy-washy granola-eating left-wing hypocrite kind of way. But they weren't the murderer. So if you watch that movie again, it totally spoils the end of the movie that whoever isn't using Apple products is probably the bad guy, but he's given Apple products to the worst and most hateful people in the movie. And I love it. It's mwah, chef's kiss. Delicious. Absolutely followed the letter of the rule from Apple. And I'm absolutely positive that Apple completely intended for their products to be used and operated by characters that we would despise in the middle of a mystery. Just glorious. Oh, Simon says, Hypno, Arrested's forced Burger King placement was mocked brilliantly within the show. And again, you look at like a company like a Burger King or a Wendy, someone who's got really snarky social media, and you'd be like, you would absolutely want that kind of snark. The show is calling it out. It makes it even funnier that the show is calling it out. That brings even more attention to your brand. And if your brand plays it off like, yeah, we were in on the joke the whole time, that it's so much better for your company. So I'm kind of surprised that more marketing departments don't kind of play that with their like entrenched product placement built in. Well, now we've also seen where I don't think it's the FCC. I think it's the FTC that's responsible for pushing back against branded marketing inside a piece of television. So we don't see the exact same kinds of, I am now going to stop the plot of this show to hold up this product and or service to say it would really help us in our detective work to have this kind of camera lens on the back of a phone. Isn't that so helpful from this company that makes this phone? Full brand name, specs and brand name. So now I think you actually have to disclose that, like, the show got money to do this. So it doesn't make any sense to try and build that into the plot of an episode, because then you'd have to stop and have like, hi, I'm actually the actor who plays this character. And this moment moving forward in the show is one where we were paid to talk about this product or service. And now I'm going to go back into being the character again, and we'll talk about something you should buy. It doesn't really work as well. Aditi Anil and Simon says, Hypno, Colin Ferguson was the sheriff on Eureka. I'm just way too curious. Colin Ferguson, IMDb. There's that handsome mug. Oh, he looks pretty good. Some later photos of him. I mean, his headshot is still like from his Eureka days, but let's see. He did 5 episodes on a TV show called The Summer I Turned Pretty, 1,000 Little Cuts, a short video called Effing Ghosts, but not sanitized with the word effing. He did 11 episodes of Cedar Cove, 10 episodes of Haven. So he's done a lot of TV. I'm glad to see him. I mean, a lot of this is like one episode here, three episodes there, but he is just so accessibly, affably charming. I'm just like so disappointed. This is, I'm putting on my casting director brain from when I was doing VO work. If I ever did like TV casting, he is absolutely the kind of aw shucks, affable dad. He was so perfect in that in Eureka. And it seems like he's actually picked up quite a few also TV movies like Christmas, like Hallmark Channel kinds of things. And that sounds super cornball. I have to hope that those movies are at least fun to produce because everybody knows that they're super cornball. So you don't have to take the gig too seriously. You can kind of have some fun with it. But if I were ever casting something for TV, he is exactly the kind of like, duh, character energy I would want in like a family dramedy. Just so darn charming. He's kind of dreamy, you know. I'd cast him. Aditya Anil, spoiler alert, the murderer is Daniel Craig because he kills it in that role. He has so much fun with that. I mean, inaccurate accent notwithstanding, it is, he is kind of a wonderful, it's a wonderful portrayal from a James Bond to have that kind of fun with a detective story like that. And again, I like Rian Johnson because he's a deconstructionist. Whatever you might feel about Rian Johnson's turn directing a Star Wars film, I got exactly what I wanted out of that was a Rian Johnson movie. Rian Johnson loves to take genre content and take it apart piece by piece. And if you've never seen Brick, you are really missing out because he completely disassembles the trappings of film noir in a very stylized and melodramatic kind of way. And I really didn't appreciate film noir until I watched Brick. And then you kind of see, oh, these are the rules of film noir. I get it now. And now I go back and watch old, like, Bogart movies, and you're like, oh, okay, I get it. I see what they're doing here. Okay, this is funny now. Or this is intense for a reason. You see all this, like, stylized speech and patter and over-the-top character relationships and stuff. And you're like, oh, okay, this is resonating now in a way that I didn't really appreciate until I saw Brick. And same thing for Knives Out. He was given rules, and he followed the rules to the letter, except for the part that he took apart those rules and put them on screen for people to appreciate. I love it. I love it so much. from John Gao. I miss all the Sony product placements in Sony movies. I don't know if they are still doing it as much, especially for Xperia. I mean, it's still in Spider-Verse. Like, their phones in Spider-Verse, I think, are all still Sony. Trying to think. Yeah, I don't know that they're doing it as much in the live action. I'd actually have to look that up. In the other Sony Pictures types of things. But, like, I loved, like, this is absolutely an alternate reality where people are still using, like, Sony phones. And it's lovely. Again, it's silly, and we know why they're doing it. But I just think it's kind of cute at this point because we know that's not real life. It's fantasy. It's fantasy. We can appreciate that it's fantasy. Yeah, Malik, exactly. When you realize that all the Spider-Man movies have Sony phones and not iPhones, you cannot unsee it. Ron Guido, that's right. Colin Ferguson did become the Maytag man. So the Maytag commercials, he was doing that gig for a while. Which also, I mean, like, that was probably really good money coming off of the show, coming off of a run like Eureka. Yeah, that totally would have been up his alley. Because again, the whole thing is about being sort of useless. You know, the Maytag repairman is a guy who doesn't really do much of a job because Maytag appliances are so reliable. Oh, I guess I'll just kind of wait around for someone to have a problem, I guess. Yeah, that's right. He was the Maytag man. Oh, Simon says Hypno, same. I always thought Thomas Jane should have been a bigger star. He was so deadpan in Punisher. The scene with Kevin Nash is brilliant. I really liked in The Expanse. I really liked his turn in The Expanse, but I also feel like he was another one like Guy Pearce, where I feel the teams of managers and agents that were kind of guiding his career, they kept trying to position them as these kind of leading action stars. And I mean, again, Punisher, he's great in Punisher. I mean, I feel like the film is kind of hokey for other production reasons, but I liked his take on the character of Punisher. But I feel like you see he's kind of a craftier actor, and he loves kind of chewing into scenes in a way that he could have had more fun with more character-y roles. And then I see him in Expanse, and you're like, oh, he's having fun with this. I kind of like what he's doing there really well. DTNL, the last thing I'd want Xperia and Sony to be associated with is the Morbius movie. It's Morbin time! Oh, Lax Pro, you got to bring it back. When we saw the LGV60 in Eminem's Godzilla video, and all of those techies who were so concerned about product placement and disclosures. Oh, I have to say in my video, if it's sponsored, I have to put an FTC disclosure. How come Eminem doesn't need to put a disclosure on his Godzilla video that the LGV60 is product placement? And you're like, that is one of the most disingenuous and just dishonest arguments to throw at LG. Because there is a distinct difference between a media personality saying, these are my opinions on a phone, and I was paid to talk about the phone, versus the product placement of just the phone showing up in a music video where no claims are being made about the phone. We don't turn to Eminem for gadget reviews. So there is nothing in Eminem's history of producing media content and music that would lead us to believe that he is endorsing an LG. But of course, we all had just, I'm clutching my pearls because I'm a big time YouTuber with millions of subscribers, and I don't know how FTC disclosures work. Aren't we all concerned? Isn't there something to be concerned about? Is LG trying to cheat with Eminem and not disclosing that there was a relationship with the phone being in his music video? It was a kaiju of a phone. It made sense that you would put an LG V60 dual display device in a video titled Godzilla. Oh, the V60 is a beast of a phone in one hell of a song. And Lax Pro, it was in the case. Just perfection. Was OnePlus in House of Cards, Malik? I don't remember that. And again, I kind of have a hard time going back to House of Cards just for everything that's kind of happened with Kevin Spacey since the run of that show. That was a show that I adored. So I get over my House of Cards itch by going back and watching the original British run of House of Cards. It doesn't have quite the same hit to it, but it's got that sort of political intrigue, lots of fast talking, you know, West Wing style dialogue sequences. Like, I can kind of scratch the itch going there. But, you know, it is what it is. Simon says, Hypno, nice try, Eminem. Better luck next album. I guess Eminem's just a master of none. Actually, this does kind of want to make me bump the Eminem discography again. I might need to have that rolling when I get to some writing on this afternoon. Oh, and Aditya, y'all remember the Lumia 1020 and Katy Perry's Roar video? Yeah. I've been seeing a lot more Pixels, Kapakosh. Yeah, he says, I've seen the Pixel 6 in a few shows. I've definitely been seeing Pixels show up a lot. But again, it's always just kind of cute. You're kind of watching a show and you're like, oh, wait a minute. I know what that is. And, when something little or distinctive kind of pops out. Or like, I thought it was a terrible movie. Was it Red Notice? When they have the Microsoft dual display tablet show up. And you're like, oh, I really wish we had gotten that as an actual product. It's sad that it showed up in this movie and I couldn't play with one in real life. But, it's kind of what I'm looking forward to. I kind of feel we're going to get through this summer. And I'm working really hard to keep my expectations in check. I'm trying not to freak out about the Qualcomm X Elite. And I'm hoping we'll see any news from Qualcomm soonish on what's going down with their chip, or at least start kind of feeding some more information to press. Excuse me, I've got a bunch of coffee burps. So, like recently we just saw, like, there was a Lenovo that a Geekbench score popped up, and it's running one of these Qualcomm X Elite chips, and the scores look exactly where we think they should be, kind of competing somewhere around an Apple M2, outperforming sort of an Intel Core i7. Like, we're spot on. We're in the right territory. We're in the right place. But I'm really hoping that this leads to sort of a reimagining of some of the other systems that we count on for Windows machines. Like, I'm playing with these mini PCs, I'm playing with laptops, I'm playing with convertible tablets. And when our battery concerns, our power management concerns are reduced, I'm really hoping that by this time next year, in 2025, we're seeing the rollout of, like, thin client machines. I don't know if anyone remembers, a couple years back, I reviewed one of the Azul PC sticks. You know, it's big. It was kind of like a chunky, like, drive enclosure. But it was a full Celeron-grade PC with, like, you could have, like, just connected it with an HDMI directly. Like, there's an HDMI port directly. I don't think you'd want to put that much weight on an HDMI port, but you could, depending on your monitor setup. That was a full computer. It had a little antenna, could get Wi-Fi, had an Ethernet port, multiple USB jacks. I mean, it wasn't a powerful system, and I wouldn't have recommended it for anything other than, like, grade school student work. But then you could use that to connect to other things, or use it as a thin client, or even kind of as, like, a file server-y kind of PC. Now imagine even less power consumption in a significantly more powerful stick. And that just, like, it's lighting me up. It's lighting me up in ways that I haven't been excited about Windows machines for a while. Imagine taking a Chromecast-style puck. And in that Chromecast-style puck, you could fit a Core i7 powerful PC. What could you do with that? Like, the future of game consoles being these beefy x86-compatible machines seems kind of silly if you could pick up, like, a little Nook form factor box with a little bit of a fan, you know, a little mini fan built into it, and then that could be your whole gaming rig behind your TV. Yeah, we got to get developers on board. We got to get them making their games compatible with ARM chipsets. But like I said, on a Qualcomm 8CX Gen 3, I could play Control at 20 frames per second. If you can triple the compute power, like they're talking about doing, going from 8CX to Qualcomm X Elite, I think I'd get reasonable console-grade performance for a game like Control on something that uses a ton less power and can fit in the tiniest of little enclosures or shells. Why we wouldn't be crazy excited about that, and what other form factors we can now fit all of this extra compute power in. This is going to be what helps catch us up if we want to make another VR headset that's fully untethered. Imagine the performance of a Core i7 or even a Core i9, a last-gen Core i9, in something that's only pulling, like, 20 watts, and you could put that on your head. That's what we need if we want to compete against hardware like Vision Pro. I really hope that what we're seeing is Valve, is that whatever they do to follow up the Index, is that they're waiting for a good ARM solution. Because that makes the most sense. You get a little ARM chip in a really, really fancy headset, and it can do a ton of gaming. And yeah, I mean, you can complain about some game compatibility issues, but like all of the work that's being done on Steam Deck right now with Proton compatibility, and it's not running Windows, and I don't really care because I'm still playing a lot of my favorite games. Great. Bring that over to ARM. And we're all going to have a really good time. So, I feel like this is where I got to cap it because my voice isn't going to last for much longer. But yeah, when I can get like a little puck of a computer and put that on my desk and then I can edit and render video on that and it's like comparably performant to what I've got as a massive server chassis, I don't see how anyone could sit back, well, but it doesn't have support for this one x86 app, and that's what average consumers care about. And they can miss me. And anyone who feels like they never need to watch any of my videos ever again because they're not excited about the future and they want everything to just be the same as it currently is, I'm fine. I'm fine if they decide to never watch any of my videos ever again and never leave me another comment. That'd be cool. We're all good. We're good. This is a good good exchange, and I'm fine with that. So, ooh, and JMan150, I'm going to jump off this stream right now. JMan says, apparently the March Pixel drop just dropped a few minutes ago. And my Pixel 8 Pro is way over there, and I can't reach it. So I'm going to go check that out, as I hope everyone out there is going to start looking up the news and seeing what's coming down the pipe. I hope to have more videos out this week now that my face is not swollen. And I think there will be some fun things. On the Patreon right now is a video in early access. You can check out that if you've been missing me rambling about cameras and smartphone camera sensors. And be on the lookout for a ton of fun commentary just across the web. There are a lot of really fun techies that are putting out streams and hosting panel discussions, and we should be in their comments and we should be supporting and we should be sharing their stuff wherever we can share across social media. That's what we need to do to fight algorithms just feeding us nonsense. So, next week we'll be back on for a proper news block, gadget block, structured show. I really needed to take the time. This was really fun, just kind of straying, just kind of chatting, riffing wherever you wanted to go in the chat. Really, really lovely stuff. So I appreciate y'all coming to hang out and having a good time. Definitely give the replay crew a share. Both the audio and the video should be out shortly after this podcast ends. And I'll catch y'all next week. Take care of yourself so you can keep taking care of others. Keep supporting your favorite content creators in any way that you can. And yeah, I'll catch you back. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.